Wow, what a great service already it's been. Haven't you really, really enjoyed it? It's been great. We are in part two of a series we began on Easter called Doubt Less. So we're grateful to have you here. If last week was your first week with us, I'm so glad you took up the challenge to come back again. We are in this series covering, really in a very introductory way, five core concepts and topics that we need to make sure we doubt less. And so I'll put those on the screen again. Here they are. Last week we looked at part one, doubt less about the resurrection. Today we're looking at doubt less about a theistic universe. And then next week, doubt less about the Bible, followed by doubt less about Jesus and doubt less about the truth. So today, when we talk about doubt less about a theistic universe, let me just start with the basics here. The New Testament comes in Greek first, and the word for God is theos, okay? Theos, from which we get the word theist or theology. Theology is the study of God. A theist is a believer in God. If you put an alpha, the letter A in the Greek, in front of the word theos, you get atheist. An unbeliever in God. It's an alpha privative. It negates the word you put a prefix to it. And so we're looking at the difference between a theistic universe and an atheistic universe and looking at how you can doubt less about a theistic universe. And some of you are thinking, why didn't you just say doubt less about creation? I thought about it. But I thought, you know, I'm going to stay with the labels that come in a book that I keep promoting and asking you if you're really going to need some solid answers. We're going to show that book again on the screen a little bit later, Evidence That Demands a Verdict in its newest form, which they keep updating. I understand there's another update coming this year, I think. But fabulous resource that's like an encyclopedia on answers to these kind of questions of doubt. Now, I want to begin now with a little imagination. I want you to picture about 100 years ago or so, maybe a little less, and we're making this up, but it's based on history, so it's not completely made up. Ethan, who sits down and grabs a paper, and in another place, same city, Sarah grabs that same paper, and they have two very different views of what just came out. So I'm going to put on the screen a made-up front page of a paper that reads, "New discoveries. The universe had a beginning." Now, to the theist, that's not a new discovery. But in that day, based on where we were at in history, that was a startling new discovery coming from the field of science, that science itself, and these are science in those days, were filled with many, many who held to a presupposition, we'll call it naturalism. And this presupposition of naturalism was in vogue, and the in vogue idea was, science can explain everything, we don't need God. And so they're explaining all the origins of everything without leaning upon the supernatural. So they believed in a closed system, that the universe was a closed system. There's nothing outside of that closed system. There's nothing outside of the natural. To explain the natural, you can explain all of the natural from nature itself if we study it hard enough. And that was the presupposition. But as they're reading this article, scientists are now questioning that at that time, in fact, coming to conclusions based on Einstein's theory of relativity, which I will articulate so clearly, okay, that in the article they tried to dumb it down so that you can understand that he was showing some things about the universe that was leading to some new thoughts about the universe. And then shortly thereafter, the Hubble telescope's discovery of the fact that the universe is not static. It's dynamic. And with Einstein's theory, it wasn't sure whether it's shrinking or whether it's moving or whether it's growing, but according to the Hubble discoveries, the not static universe was expanding, and so now different conclusions are coming together that this implies that the universe had a beginning. Now, this rattled Ethan Because now if it has a beginning, it's like, okay, wait. If everything we know and everything we can see, all that there is has a beginning, what caused it? And he's starting to go through his own mind and shaking his paradigm. A lot of us are kind of taught by science to think a certain way, that naturalism and science must go together. We need to understand that naturalism is a philosophy, or better yet, a presupposition that you assume to be true that you cannot prove, to then develop theory about how the rest of it works. And so if you think naturalism is science, that's not true. Science is the study of nature, but naturalism, this idea of a closed box and everything in nature, is explained by nature, and there's nothing outside of nature. Stuff, matter, energy, space, all of that, according to science, and it even developed further and further and further, the consensus, even of naturalistic scientists, metaphysical naturalists, the consensus is that the universe has a beginning. So this was rattling Ethan and causing him some great heartache. Sarah, on the other hand, not so much. As you can imagine, why? But before we keep going, I just want to ask the question. What does an atheist feel when an atheist doubts his atheism? This is not really, it's kind of funny, but it's not, we tend to think of doubts only for those of us who are believers. What I'm trying to get at is everybody's a believer of something. Okay? Everybody has doubts, everybody has worldviews, everybody's worldview is being shaped and challenged and altered to match what we perceive the world to be. And so I just want you to realize, most of us in here are already theists and believers, I want you to realize that when an atheist begins to doubt his atheism, that usually is very unsettling, and what they usually feel is fear. Okay? Not unlike ourselves, when we start to doubt our theism, what we usually feel is fear. But different reasons, okay? So just kind of keep that in mind as we continue this line of thinking. There are scientists of all stripes, scientists of all kinds. There are atheistic scientists and there are theistic scientists. And it isn't that one is more right than the other. Everybody is trying to see what their world is really like and using scientific methodology to look at the evidence to see what their world is really like, to answer all the tough questions. And so a lot of people think, and it's the naturalistic scientists that makes the theistic scientists sound stupid and back and forth. Nobody's stupid. Everybody's intelligent. They're all trying to make sense of what they believe, what they presuppose, and which direction is it? Which leads me to point number one. True science is not in conflict with true faith. I'm not saying anything unusual here. Eventually, truth wins. Okay? The naturalistic, metaphysical naturalistic scientist would state the same thing. They're trying to show that their presupposition is correct, and here's the evidence. And what you need to understand is that believing scientists actually led the charge when science became a thing, to because it was so predictable. The universe is great. It's got laws. It's got design. It's so predictable. If we study along these lines, we can see more about God's design. And so many of the scientists, leaders in their field, were believers. And so there's scientists of all stripes. So this is not a science versus faith talk. Keep that in mind. This is not a science versus faith talk. This is a talk about hypothesis that best fits the data. That's science 101. Now, you will run into people and schools and institutions and whole groups of thinkers that will present naturalism as established fact. No matter how you slice it, it's a presupposition. Now, the study of nature is science, but naturalism is this closed box idea. There's nothing outside of nature, and it all can be explained within itself, and there is no supernatural, there is no God. That's just all there is, okay? And they will say that's established fact. No, that's a presupposition you're trying to show from your science. Just like we try to show from our science, no, it makes sense that there's a God. All right. So, Sarah, of course, reading the paper, she's not surprised at all, because what is the presupposition of us theists? All right, in one word, God. In fact, our book, the Bible, which is really a library, by the way, it's not a book, it's a library. It took 1,500 years to put this library together, written by so many different writers. That's why it's such kind of supernatural in itself, that there's this cohesive thing running through it all those years. But it begins with the presupposition, Genesis 1:1, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, which is precisely what the headlines were saying without saying God. It's just simply saying, the universe began, which freaked Ethan out. Because if that's true according to science, he's got some thinking to do. So thinking about that, is the Bible's presupposition any harder to believe than the naturalist's presupposition? Well, it depends on where you sit. You're going to think the other person's is harder to believe because you already have a presupposition on the opposite chair. And so that's why we have this polarized difference of opinion. But my opinion is, guess. It's harder to believe that the entire universe started without a starter. Get it? That's kind of where I'm coming from. So which is the data, actually? Point number two, naturalism is like the shoe that doesn't fit. Now, don't judge me for this. I've done this over and over and over again with all eight of my grandkids. I did it with the two kids that I had before them. They would so cutely come up to me with their shoes, and they'd say, whether it's Papa or Daddy, they'd say, can you put on my shoes? And I'd say, what's the magic word? Can you please put on my shoes? And I'd say, I think so. And they look at me puzzled, and then I try to put them on, and they don't fit. And they look at me like I'm crazy. No, Papa, on me. Can you please put shoes on me? And I have a lot of fun with that, and my grandkids, they're learning I'm crazy. All right. Naturalism is like the shoe that doesn't fit. There's a very old argument that theists of all stripes will have used since the Middle Ages. I think it originated in the Muslim faith, but Christians are using it, Jewish people are using it, any theist is using it, okay? And it goes like this. Premise one, everything that begins to exist has a cause. Premise two, the universe began to exist. Premise three, therefore the universe has a cause. This is what Ethan was having trouble with. He'd heard the argument, and now he's reading from the science community that the universe has a cause, and in his day, all the scientists believed that the answer to this puzzle is that the universe is eternal. And because the universe is eternal, you don't need an uncaused causer. The universe just is. Now, Ethan knows better than this because he's a smart guy. He would be tempted to, like many others, say, yeah, let's just back it up. What caused God? But Ethan knows that argument doesn't work because God himself has said that his name is I Am That I Am. And he teaches consistently he is the uncaused cause and that he is eternal. But once the scientific community began to say the evidence is pointing to the fact that the universe has a beginning, they have this huge puzzle because now something has to cause everything. And the only way science can operate is within the observable everything. And they were saying before, there is nothing outside of the observable, say that, observable everything. And so now he's really stuck, and he realizes this, although God, the supernatural, can be eternal and cause the universe, there's nothing illogical about that. There's something illogical about having a beginning of a universe without a cause. And if there is a cause, there's no way for science to get at it. Are you with me? That is problematic. So Ethan sits back after thinking it through and thinking, you know what? Science is always discovering stuff, always discovering stuff. So I will just wait because science will eventually discover the cause. The cause of this thing that is before everything? How? How can science discover that? 100 years later, Ethan is gone. And instead of discovering the cause of everything scientifically without a theistic creation model, has run into more problems, not less. And yet, they won't let go of their paradigm. So that bothers Ethan. Meanwhile, Sarah sat down and opened up Hebrews 11. And here's how Hebrews 11 reads. Now faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. This is what the ancients were commended for. By faith we understand that the universe was formed at God's command, so that what is seen was not made out of what was visible. The last phrase is exactly what both groups believe, but the first part of the phrase is what only we believe. Both groups believe now that what is seen was created, poof. But one group has no idea how. And they have no idea how to speculate, to come up with an idea, because it's outside of the realm of science. And once you have a closed box, you say it's a closed box, and you can't put God in the box, and your idea just makes everything in science too easy. Everything you don't understand, you just say, God did it, God did it, God did it, God did it. And science is going to be disciplined in that, more disciplined than that. But once you say it, this closed box have a beginning, the lid is open, and God is on the outside who made the box, and God enters into the world, and every time he acts, he does things that's outside of the box. Okay? And so that is what we encounter experientially and write about, and that's how we have the New Testament. That's how we have the Old Testament. Literal things took place, and they're writing this down in history. This happened, this happened, this happened, this happened. And the naturalist says, no, it didn't, no, it didn't, no, it didn't. Tell me how you're saying, no, it didn't, because it doesn't fit our presupposition. So what are you proving? Our presupposition. And that's circular reasoning. Okay? So 100 years later, point number three, the evidence of a finely tuned universe is stacking higher and higher with more and more detail that just ends up being the shoe that doesn't fit. I mean, I would freak out my kids. I wouldn't just try to put it on my foot because I could only get it on two toes. I'd say, yeah, I'll be happy to put it on. And I just hang it on my ear, you know? It's like, yes. And it seems like naturalists are just as crazy. I'll be happy to hang it on my ear. It's still true. I don't believe in a God. Okay. But let's look at the evidence. Now, here I have to get into the realm of I'm not a scientist. I'm just going to do my best at synthesizing reams of paper in this book. So here on the screen is the book again. I've widened it so you can read it. The completely updated and expanded classic Evidence That Demands a Verdict. This is 2017. I think you were saying they're coming out in a new one this year, April, this month? Could be. Life-changing truth for a skeptical world. This is not just Josh McDowell, but now his son, who is a PhD in apologetics, which, again, last week I said, that doesn't mean I'm sorry. That's the study of the evidence of God, okay? Now, this is my attempt at synthesizing a lot. If you want more actual science and more references, I'll point you to this. The universe is packed with newly discovered evidence that is a finely tuned system. The book Evidence That Demands a Verdict gets into the probability of each of these finely tuned details coming together. Various components of the universe exhibit very precise configurations crucial for the life to flourish on Earth. From the type and location of galaxies to the size and age of stars, each factor contributes to the conditions conducive to life. Surrounding planets, including Jupiter and Saturn, play a protective role by reducing the impact of asteroids and comets, while Earth's moon stabilizes its tilt, maintaining a habitable environment. Fundamental constants in the universe, such as gravitational force, cosmological constants, electron properties, and nuclear force strength, are very finely balanced and tuned within narrow parameters to allow for the synthesis of elements and the formation of stable stars, all of which is essential for the sustaining of life on Earth. Even minor deviations in the universe's initial conditions would have resulted in an entirely different cosmos that is completely inhospitable to the life as we know it. So if you ever thought, I wonder if there's other planets that have life, you need to understand the science is now looking at this whole universe seems to be so finely tuned that it's all about Earth, all about life as we know it. And when you look at the vastness of the universe, it's mind-staggering. It's mind-blowing. And it's so vast and so amazing, and the design so complex that naturalists almost ascribe worship to nature with the language they use. Nature designs. Nature does this. Nature has purpose. It's like you're misguided. The probability that all of this happens by accident is astronomical. And so this book does really, really well with each individual aspect telling you what the probability is. And then they try to put numbers together for the probability of all of these systems, all of these individual things, just a few of them, not all of them, if they could all accidentally come together to have this kind of universe where we could be alive in it. And it's astronomically beyond the possibility of chance, random stuff taking place this way. So just to get at that in a more simplistic way, well, before we do, Sarah turned from Hebrews, and she turned to Psalm 19, 1 through 4. The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the works of his hands. Day after day, they pour forth speech. Night after night, they reveal knowledge. They have no speech, they use no words, no sound is heard from them, yet their voice goes out into all the earth, their words to the ends of the world. I want you to imagine that you're just walking along the beach, and this is in a time frame where you had no idea what a watch is. And then you see this thing that looks very unusual, and it's nestled in the sand, and you pick it up, and here it is. So we have in front of us an Apple Watch, and you've never seen a watch before, and you're looking at this, and you can look at it and ponder it, and you, here's what you don't do. You don't automatically assume, man, by chance, this thing just kind of came together and became this thing, and it, look what happens when I touch it here. Look what happens when this happens. This is really wild. How did this just kind of happen? Nobody thinks something so intricately fine-tuned, just sort of happens to come together. Everybody studying this, the more they study it, the more they realize this has been intricately and fine-tuned and designed for a particular purpose. And now I'm trying to tell you the entire universe is far more detailed in its intricate, finely tuned design to support life on planet Earth. That's its purpose. And general revelation is teaching us that. So we ask ourselves, if this fits so well on a theistic universe, does it fit that well in an atheistic universe? No. It doesn't just happenstance come together the way it's come together. How do you explain this? How do you explain that? How do you explain the exact distance of the moon from the sun? I mean, from the earth that's required to sustain life? I mean, the precision is so precise. So that's kind of what I wanted to get at today. And we'll read Psalm 8, 3 through 4. When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars, which you have set in place. What is mankind that you are mindful of them? Human beings that care for them? David wrote this, and I think he thinks what most of us think. When we look into the universe, we feel so small. The next time you feel so small that you feel a little bit valueless, you need to look beyond general revelation. Because general revelation points to a few things, but only special revelation can answer this question, and it does. Special revelation is where God shows up and begins to instruct us more about what we can know. Here's something you need to know. If you start to doubt your atheism and you're freaked out, fear like that is driven away by perfect love. 1 John chapter 4, check it out. It's true for us believers as also. When we start to go, it's not what you know that drives the fear away. It's who you know that drives the fear away. You need to get beyond knowing about God with a little bit of knowledge to knowing God himself and beginning to experience a vivid, real relationship with him where all the body of information which he has revealed to us is now starting to make sense, and it makes sense for me. It works. And he speaks to me. And I speak to him. And so I want to leave you with some steps to go there. And also an invitation. Please come back because we're going to talk about special revelation next week. Doubt less about the Bible. An introduction to a huge study all by itself. God tells us perfect love drives out fear. Now, this is true. We start fearing God. You don't fear God if you understand that he loved you so much, he sent his son to take your place, to remove your sin, to let it be buried with him, so we could unite with him and let our old lives be buried with him, to be raised up out of the waters of covenant union with Christ, and to experience a union that will take us into eternity, because as he was raised, we shall be raised. He loves us. He made this whole universe for us. We fell. The universe fell. The fallenness of the universe is mixed with beauty, wonder, awe, and cruelty, sin, and darkness. And the special revelation explains it all. And that God has done something about it, is doing something about it, and will do something about it. And he loves you enough to invite you. So on the back side of your outline, there's a challenge at the very, very bottom that reads like this. Take a nature walk or spend time outdoors intentionally, observing the beauty and intricacy of God's creation. As you observe, reflect on how the natural world reflects the glory and presence of God. Verbalize these reflections as praise and thanks to God. Get to know the God who loves you so. Okay? Are you glad you came today?
Yes.
I'm glad you came too. Again, if you have a prayer need, I encourage you to fill out a prayer card, put it in the giving boxes on your way out. Prayer team, come up to the front right here. If you need something right now to be prayed for, we invite you to pray with the prayer team. The staff will pray with these cards a little later this week. If you're a guest, we'd love you to take this Connect card, fill it out for us. Just takes a few seconds. Go to the information center and give it to them. We'll give you a gift bag, and we'd love to keep the dialogue going. See you next week. God bless you.